Talk Back with Gary Nall, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Nall Show. And now, your host, Gary Nall.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. I'm broadcasting live from our studios in New York City and video streaming live also from ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or GaryNall.com. Today, no guests. I wanted to spend more time being able to see what are the issues that are important in your life. What questions, what comments, what perspective do you have? So I'll be sharing the latest on health and healing, a lot from the environment, a couple of special commentaries, including our lives are under threat from some of the most powerful and richest entities. How can we fight back from Naomi Klein and Bill McKibben from Alternet? And also from Joe Hirshhorn, Despicable Lies, Delusional Economic Recovery, Hyped Unemployment Numbers, and Joe Hirshhorn will be reporting on that from Global Research. So we have a full hour, but at any time during this hour that you give us a call at 888-874-4888, I will enfold those calls into the overall context of the program. Again, our number is 888-874-4888. Let's begin. And I always try to find topics not in the mainstream media, but rather in the original areas of science. The whole program is based upon the concept of wellness, physical wellness, spiritual wellness, emotional wellness, ecological wellness. And that's why I choose the different topics, not just on health and nutrition. That's only one aspect of wellness. For example, a critical chemical for human intimacy and romance is what? It is serotonin. In fact, nearly all of the judgments that we make about intimacy of a couple's relationships are influenced by this simple brain chemical. This is according to biological psychiatry. And what they did, they took a group of volunteers whose levels of serotonin activity had been low. And then they put them through a series of studies, and here's what the results were. For those individuals given amino acid drinks that were able to manipulate their blood concentrations of the amino acid tryptophan, which is a vital ingredient in the synthesis of serotonin, those that had the tryptophan increased their serotonin, then had a much different effect upon their sense of intimacy. Quote, serotonin is important in social behavior and also plays a significant role in psychological disorders such as depression. This is according to Dr. Rogers of Oxford University. We wanted to see whether serotonin activity influenced the judgments we make about people's close personal relationships. And indeed it did. As the serotonin level was rebalanced up to its normal level, there was a greater awareness of intimacy and romantic involvement. Quote, although this is only one study, the same pattern may well extend to the way we perceive our own relationships. So what this means is, in lay language, that sometimes individuals in relationships blame each other or blame themselves for something they've said or done, or not said or not done, that has impacted the relationship, and where indeed that can be a case, overriding all that should be, do we feel passion? Are we open for pleasure? Do we limit ourselves? And if so, in what areas do we limit ourselves? Imagine all the conversations you don't have because the people in your life choose not to educate themselves. They're comfortable in what they know, and they don't want to be confused by what they don't. Therefore, if you want to have a conversation, you have to adapt to their level. But what if you're a person that's naturally curious? What if you're excited by all the different things you could learn and all the different insights other people, other cultures, other backgrounds have? Wouldn't you want to seek out then individuals that are always challenging themselves, growing? I believe you would. Now, that's just on an intellectual level. What about a spiritual level? Yesterday, I was fortunate enough to give a keynote speech at Fairleigh Dickinson University, where I'm also a professor in sciences, in their graduate division. And most of the people there were poor. It was all about poverty, or people who support people who are in poverty, different groups. And one of the individuals made a comment that, why are we so poor? Why are so many suffering in America when we're the most giving and generous nation in the world? And then I asked him, when are we generous and giving? When there's a hurricane, a tornado, an earthquake, around Thanksgiving and Christmas, and we see how important it is for people who are hungry to have a meal? Yeah, then a lot of people show that they're concerned and they do something. What about the other 363 days a year? Do people not still have to eat? Is there not still a great need? Of course there is. We're not the greatest nation. We're the most powerful. There's a difference. We're not the brightest nation, but we're technologically savvy. We're certainly the most aggressive nation, and we're the best at posturing and positioning ourselves for the rest of the world to think that we are this great benevolent nation. If we were, you wouldn't have had 1 million dead men, women, and children in Iraq. You wouldn't have had 500,000 dead children in Iraq prior to this under the Clinton administration with intentional deprivations. For example, knocking out their water treatment plants in civilian areas and their electrical plants, knowing full well that the people who would be most adversely affected would not be Saddam Hussein or his generals or ruling Ba'athist party. It would be the poor. The logic was simple. Their logic was, if we get enough people seeing their children sicken and died, then they'll rise up and overthrow Saddam Hussein. Well, it didn't work. And we never apologized for committing genocide with intent against a group of children. How brave is that? How wonderful are you when you do that? We stood by and allowed 800,000 people to be slaughtered with machetes and small weapons in Rwanda. Think of all the different countries where there was a duly elected Democrat, a democratic election, and we didn't like the outcome, so we intervened to undermine it. And yet we say we promote democracy. In fact, I'm so concerned about the lies and the conditioning behind the lies and the media participation in these lies. Judith Miller at the New York Times, and now Judith Miller at Fox. In fact, most of the people at Fox, if you look into their background, it's an extremely discouraging and sordid background. And yet these are the people, like Oliver North, who get to give their opinion without any context to who they are, what they've done, how they've been wrong in the past. And like Dick Morris, he's chronically wrong. And why was he disgraced? And Newt Gingrich, why was he disgraced? What did they do that showed a lack of character, a lack of ethics, a lack of morality? Oh, let's not bring that up. So the people who keep wrapping themselves, including Bill O'Reilly, who had to settle a major sexual harassment suit along with Fox, then they moralized to the rest of the world. And in the process, they lie about who we are. We have 1,000 military bases throughout the world. We take over governments or manipulate governments. We supported all 22 Arab League nations and gave them the very weapons and training and techniques and surveillance, torture, kidnappings and disappearing of activists, union leaders, democracy and freedom advocates. We show them how to destroy these people. In Egypt, in in Libya, in Saudi Arabia. We overlooked all their human rights abuses because it was profitable. We got oil and we sold arms. And yet now we wrap ourselves in the idea that the blanket that we are with you. So go to the streets. Well, we're not with them. It's all hypocrisy. So at some point, we either stand up for the truth or we continue to live with lies. So I'm going to do a whole five-part series called In the Name of Democracy, Freedom, and Truth, what we say that we're doing in other countries, and we do just the opposite. That'll be coming in the near future. In any case, back to this idea that are we able to understand in the nature of our relationships that if you have a biochemical imbalance, like a reduction in serotonin, your perceptions can be altered. Your sense of openness can be altered. You can actually have a heightened sense of insecurity. You can have people do things for you and not appreciate them. You can receive but not reciprocate with intimacy. You can take people's confidences and then betray them. Why? Because the real balance in both spiritual and biochemical balances, meaning only do that which is spiritual. And with spiritual, it's all love. In the presence of love, you can't hurt people. You can't hurt them by what you say, and you can't hurt them by what you do. So when you're coming from real love, there is no effort to demean a person, deny them, to abuse them, to create a sense of guilt and shame in them, to try to control them. The need to control another human being comes from the dark side, our conditioned side, that which breeds a contempt for everything that love is. So the very people who frequently use the word love or trust are actually manifesting its opposite and are terrified of people who actually are filled with love and trust and openness. What you don't like about yourself, what you loathe about yourself, and what you fear about yourself, you will project upon other people. And then the reflection of what you're projecting upon other people, you don't realize it's your projection, it's your energy coming right back at you. And this creates endless cycles of conflict. When people are coming from love, everything they touch is enhanced. It grows. It's nurtured. Love nurtures. When you come from need, or you're coming from insecurity, and you use words, you've mastered the art of wordplay, and you have not mastered the art of what it means, love. You will be a religious person in a church, a synagogue, or a mosque, and be utterly non-spiritual in your day-to-day actions. So if you're a person that cares about other people, then show it. And if you can't show it, then you're a hypocrite. You're simply living with the idea that you're something you're not. And that's how most people, the vast majority of people I ever meet in my life, live. Massive dysfunction. Next up, if you've been taking a sigh, A-C-A-I, good for you. The latest study of the Journal of Medicinal Foods, quote, improvement in well-being, especially joint health, it will help all the joint pain throughout your body and improves blood circulation of antioxidants. There was a 12-week study. They drank the juice, measured their antioxidants, and found a substantial improvement. Quote, the data presented here show a correlation between pain levels and antioxidant status, but only in relationship to the C-reactive protein, a marker of inflammation. Well, hey, anything that lowers your C-reactive protein lowers your capacity to have a heart attack or cancer, so that's good. And finally, choose organics to avoid artificial dyes, pesticides linked to ADHD. This is the latest study on this from Pediatrics. Quote, from Natural News, the U.S. food supply is riddled with petroleum-based artificial food dyes and synthetic chemical pesticides, both of which have been linked to causing attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and other behavioral problems in children. So in order to avoid them, the Organic Trade Association is urging parents to shop certified organic as this is the only food category that is designed to be free of those harmful toxins. This study was conducted at the University of Southampton, United Kingdom, and what initially prompted a review by the Food and Drug Administration the safety of artificial food colors and pesticides. That study found a direct, I repeat, a direct correlation between consumption of artificial additives and a spike increase in ADHD rates among children. So get out the food, additives and dyes, and pesticides, and watch how that helps ADHD. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment. Please stay with us.
I was dancing with my darling to the Tennessee waltz when an old friend I happened to see.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Noll. Now we're going to go to phones, and hopefully for the rest of the hour, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. By the way, I want to thank the people who came to the rally in Union Square on Friday to protest the policies of the Bank America. We did a big rally there. Hundreds of people from this audience were there, and Chris Hedges, who I have a great deal of respect for, was there. And also for those of you who turned up for our running and walking club to train for the New York City Marathon this morning. At one point, we were all going in a single file. The runners are already left. Our runner group that runs was already on the road. These were just the power walkers. They stretched for over a half a mile, back to back to back. We had a lot of people turn out. So those people are going to be doing the New York City Marathon, as you can too if you come next Sunday. Final day to get started. And let's go over and say hello to Robert from Maryland. Hi, Robert. Robert, you're on the line.
Oh, yes. Okay. Hi, Gary. Do you have any information on the premature hardening of a baby's soft spot?
No, I don't.
Okay.
No, I can't help you with that.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Because that frequently fills in. So you can't always determine that a baby's soft spot on the top of the skull will stay that way. It depends upon the mineralization and depend upon if the baby is breastfeeding, generally that soft spot will harden out quicker than if they're fed formula. Philip from Vermont. Hi, Philip.
Hi, Gary. My question is concerning, so I'm kind of focusing on the global climate situation, considering looking at North Carolina most recently. What is your perspective on this in terms? Do you look to see anything rather than just local stuff, Carolina, Japan, whatever, areas of earthquakes, tsunamis, and droughts, whatever happening, which we, of course, been seeing over the last few years. Do you see anything or expect anything even bigger that's more affecting more of the entire planet than global warming,
yes.
Of course, affects a great deal of the planet. But something even on a larger scale than that, let's say, in the coming, year or two or
yes, I do.
3 or whatever, or just kind of individual areas being hit with hurricanes and earthquakes and that type of thing.
Okay, Philip, just take a look at the weather patterns for the last 5 days. You've had over 25 people killed in what was considered unusual, abnormal, or freak tornadoes in different parts of the United States and extreme storms. Everything now in our weather will become extreme. This summer, expect the hottest of days in recorded history. Expect the coldest days next winter, the greatest rainfall. So everything now is going to become extreme, and the extreme will be the new norm. Also, expect within the next 2 years that large calving, which is the break-off of ice, glacier ice, that collapses into the sea that especially into Antarctica and in Greenland, that this will accelerate. And because the high heat in the Arctic and in Antarctica, you're going to have a warming of the waters, and that could affect the current, especially as the glaciers in Canada, Alaska, and North America start to melt at an accelerated rate, which they are, pouring more fresh water, which doesn't have the salinity and therefore changes the ratio of the sodium and hence the salinity of the ocean. So you have less ice pack forming, and then that accelerates even more the warming, because when the sun's rays hit the ice or the snow, they bounce back into the atmosphere. But now with that ice being melt, either on a mountain, it warms up the mountain, and therefore ice further up on the mountain melts faster, releasing the water too quickly, causing flooding. Or it goes into the ocean and goes deep enough down to start to warm the ocean and start allowing some of the held methane gases from the sea vegetation to release itself. Or in the case of the largest a permafrost area of the world melting in Russia and in the Siberian area, you're going to have massive amounts of methane gas coming up from this. For centuries, that area has been frozen over, and sometimes frozen over 12 months a year. Now it's not. So all this means is that we are now living in what is known as chaos theory when it comes to the environment. And that means that there is no predictable, accurate mathematical model for what anything is going to be. I will predict, and I have predicted, that the city of Dubai will cease to exist as a functioning city within the next 5 years. It was built stupidly, but typically with arrogance and hubris, with magnificent architectural structure. They're to be commended for the architect. It's just breathtaking. But they built it on sand. And here's just a basic reality of science. No matter how far down that you put these concrete poles, these stanchions that go underneath the building, they're still resting on sand. There is no bedrock. And now, according to people I know, including friends who have been in Dubai recently, buildings are cracking, roofs are cracking, their streets are cracking. Massive amounts of empty places because it's not sustainable. And then they built that palm leaf island right into the ocean. And on that are some of the most expensive homes in the area of the Middle East. Some homes on some streets start at $3 million and go to $8 million. Some of the apartments on the tall buildings go up to $20 million. They have the only 7-star hotel in the world there. Now, at a certain point, what more can a hotel be? How many threads of linen would you get in a sheet? Or how many towels would you get? And how soft are the towels after you get out of a shower? Or how many heads of spray hit you when you're in the shower? How many different people can wait on you when you're in your room? It doesn't change the quality of the stay. Whether you're in a 3-star, 4-star, 5-star, 6, or 7, you're still going to get pretty much the same all-around experience. So then it's a matter of perception. It would be no different than someone making you a sundae and sprinkling gold on top of it. Well, the sundae normally would be $4. The gold sprinkled on top, now you have a $1,000 sundae. I remember last year, I think it was at the Meridian Hotel here in New York City, someone came up with a breakfast that was $1,000. There's nothing you could eat that would justify the food being $1,000. But if you give people the illusion that there's something unique about that, then they'll go for it because they want to be the person that has something no one else has. That comes from their insecurity, not just a spirit of adventure. That's that kind of modern decadence that we had in unique small groups historically throughout all of time. But today it permeates to about 30 million people in the United States who are really wealthy and would love to be able to brag that they had a $1,000 breakfast, or they stayed in a $20,000 a night suite in Dubai. What you won't see is you won't see the slave labor that built Dubai. You won't see the Maseratis, Lamborghinis, Ferraris in the parking lots of the airports with no license plates because the people didn't want to be thrown in jail for not paying their final bill, so they just split. Thousands of these cars there. Owners are gone. But in the end, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the fact that the ocean's going to take back. And there's only one ocean. There's not the Indian Ocean, the Pacific Ocean, the Atlantic Ocean. There's just the ocean. It's all one. And that will take back all of this. When that ocean rises, it will take back Manhattan. It'll take back Washington, D.C. Washington's at sea level. If you just take a boat out the Potomac and then out through the Chesapeake Bay, you're in the ocean. When that rises, all that will be underwater. When the water rises in lower Manhattan, it'll fill the tunnels. The same tunnels that supply water, gas, electricity, subways. But we won't talk about it. We won't think about it. No different than talking or thinking about why you would live within 200 miles of a nuclear facility. Well, they've got a protective zone, 10-mile protection zone, evacuation zone. Is that rewriting the laws of physics that if there's a meltdown at Indian Point, 30 miles north of New York, at the wind blowing 15 miles an hour in 2 hours, 20 million Americans living in the greater area, 8.5 million in New York and its boroughs, then Long Island, New Jersey, some of those people will be fatally affected. And if it was a serious leak and you were exposed for 2 days, then you're going to die. You just don't know when, but you'll have radiation poisoning. And all the buildings will be permanently polluted. And there won't be any exit strategy. There'll be no way of getting out of New York or New Jersey or any of these areas. Because if politicians actually had to look at the problem, they have no solutions. And rather saying, you know something, this was really stupid. We built a nuclear facility too close to a major city, and there's no way we can get all the people out of this city. There'll be absolute chaos. So you stay in your home and you put a white sheet up against the window. It will not help. Within 8 to 9 hours after the city's hit, you already, no matter where you're at, you're going to have a very high dose of radiation. So we just can't be honest about it. The architects, the building engineers can't be honest about why they built at ocean level without any thought that the oceans will ever rise. Or the rulers spend all those over $1 trillion without thinking, what if? Well, there was no what ifs. You get a lot of optimistic people who only get paid and only are rewarded if you can convert a mind to no what ifs, no doubts. Well, if you have no doubts, then you have no plan B. Without a plan B in life, when you hit a wall, it's not like hitting it at 5 miles an hour. You just hit it at 100 miles an hour. So we don't want anything to temper our enthusiasm. So we simply deny any reality that scares us. That's how it works. So that then means that in California, Nevada, New Mexico, much of Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, especially within 100 miles of the Gulf, much of Florida on both sides, certainly from the Keys clear up through Juniper, and on the west side from, let's say, Naples, which is the last city on the west coast, clear up and around Panama City, which hits most of it. You're going to have places that if there is a rise in the water, a warming of the water, immediately when you have a hurricane, that can take you up one whole type of hurricane from 3 to 4, 4 to 5. And if you have a real acceleration in the heat, it can take you up 2 points. So now you're going to get worse hurricanes when the water warms, especially deep water, like in the Gulf. You're going to have more Teutonic shifting. And, for example, did you know that people living in Arkansas have had over 5,000 earthquakes in the last couple of months? Most are small. One was a 4.8, I believe. Just like right now, they've had hundreds of aftershocks, including a 7 and a 6.5 in Japan. If you want to take a long bet, bet that if they ever get around to being honest, something the Chinese government and the utilities have not been up to this point, they would have to say that 50 miles around the nuclear facilities will be forever a dead zone, much like around Chernobyl. And that those people that they allowed to stay there are now going to end up with cancers. Women with premature aborts or miscarriages or birth defects. They will deny this. They'll try to cover it up. They'll manipulate the public health statistics. But the reality is we're now finding out that there's 10,000 times more radiation that went into the water. When it goes into the water, it doesn't stay stationary. It goes with the currents. They'll say, well, but the iodine will be gone in 16, 18 days. Yes, but what about the cesium? What about the plutonium? What about the 61 other forms of radiolytic fissionable products, many of which can be there for 200 or 300 years? It'll go into the plankton. It'll go into the small fish eaten by the bigger fish. And those fish don't stay in one location. They swim. The water moves. Then you're looking at all the farmland that can't be used in a country that has very little farmland to begin with. And even though they're absolutely brilliant at how they use their farmlands, now they're going to be even more responsible for finding other sources of energy. They've got the money to rebuild Japan. They have $850 billion in U.S. Treasury bills. They could cash those in. And therefore, we would have to give them the money to rebuild their country. I would say it's right now, I'm going to predict that it's going to run about $700 to $800 billion to rebuild their country. You heard me right. Let me tell that figure again, $700 to $800 billion. When originally they said $5 billion, I said it was $300 billion. Then when they said it was $300 billion, I said $500 billion, because I would start doing analysis of the island. And the last thing they want to do is have anything get too close to Tokyo. Because they have no place to move Tokyo, either the people, the building, or the businesses. And that will mean the end of Japan as we know it. But you can't just end something because you've got tens of millions of people. And you're the second largest economy in the world behind the United States. And then China overtook them last year, but they're right neck and neck with China. So what do you do? Well, you just simply deny that you're that in bad a shape. And so other countries will deny they're in that better shape. There's a place in England, for example, that used to have all these towns. All those towns are submerged now. They're all underwater. Did you know that? Towns that were there for hundreds of years in English history. Towns that have taverns and cathedrals, all underwater. Because those are low points, and those low points are being taken back by the sea. So the answer is don't go anywhere near the water, because if you do, you'll end up not having sustainability. Also, make sure you know where the gas fracking is occurring, because you could be 100 miles away from where there's gas fracking, but you better check your aquifer source, because the aquifer is what's going to get the chemicals, and once the chemicals are in an aquifer, there's no technology in the world that can get them out. And sometimes the only drinking water, the only water for use in a whole city, in a whole state, comes from one aquifer, a prehistoric aquifer. When that's polluted, it's polluted forever. Now, did any of these people consider this? No. They were considering how to get the gas out of the shale. So they had to pressure hose chemicals and water into these shale veins, break them up, get them back out, and then extract the gas and compress it. Very expensive technology and environmentally absolutely cataclysmic. And if they bought the politicians, so they're getting away with it. Don't be near a nuclear facility, because not one of the 104 nuclear facilities in the United States is safe. They are all outgassing radiolytic products daily. I know that for a fact because I've just reviewed the 18,000 legal documents on the closing of Shoreham and some other nuclear facilities by the federal prosecutor that worked on the case. I filmed him for my new documentary on our radiation nightmare. So, in effect, we've been lied to about everything. So when you're going to be talking about sustainability, better be in a place where you're not around any of these. And then remember, if you're too far north, you're going to have blizzard winters. And then if you're too far south, you're going to have horrendously hot summers. So you got to look intelligently. I'm doing that now, and I'm making a world chart. And I'm looking at each country to see the pros and cons of sustainability. This will be done in about 3 months. And then I'll put the chart up on my website so you can see the best places in the world to live. If you're a single, young, old, middle-aged couple, married with children, educated, not, career in one area, can you apply it to other areas? There's a lot of considerations of what I consider a sustainable environment versus, let's say, 10 years ago. Once again, we never deal with problems. Hence, we never have solutions that work. They posture in these lunatic games of wordsmanship without any sense of reasonableness. Hope that answers your question up there, Philip in Vermont. Let's say hello to Jerry from Long Island. Hi, Jerry. You're on the air, and our number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And my thoughts are not negative at all. I'm optimistic for those who are wise enough to actually make positive choices. I'm no longer, and have not been for a long time, interested in opening closed minds, arguing with people who are pure ideologues or true believers or intellectual rapturists who are so rigid in their thoughts that they demand that you prove to them, and I say, don't prove anything. If you don't want to know the truth, fine. But when the day of reckoning happens, whatever it may be, when you lose your home, or you wake up with a heart attack that day, or a breast cancer, understand something. That didn't just happen. You simply made the wrong choice. And in life, there's only two choices ever to make. Let me repeat that. There's only two choices ever to make in life, a right or wrong choice. The trouble is that no right choice ever manifests the rightness immediately, and the wrong choices never manifest the wrongness immediately. You'll never get a heart attack by having one hamburger, or lung cancer from one cigarette, or cirrhosis of the liver from one glass of alcohol. It takes a lot of them. Now here's a question. What is the magic number before you do something so abusive and take it for granted over such a long period of time that one day it tips? And lo and behold, that's the day that you're given your magic number. And you can't do anything anymore because you just got the number. Today is the day you go broke. Or today is the day that you get fired. Or today is the day that your relationship ends. Or today is the day that you have your stroke. That's what it means when we don't understand there's a consequence to every action, and there's only two ways you can do it. You can do it right, or you can do it wrong. Then we try to cradle this argument by saying, well, I didn't know, and I'll come right back at you and say, you didn't want to know. If you wanted to know the truth, you would have sought it. You put your energy into solidifying what you feel comfortable about. Therefore, your growth is limited by your level of comfort. The moment we start to get out of our comfort zone, we start to realize, gee whiz, this doesn't feel too good. And keeping most people from growing is simply how much discomfort they will allow themselves before they become aware of the truth of what their previous comfort gave them. The comfort of not exercising. The comfort of being in an abusive relationship. The comfort of working in a place that was toxic. The comfort of voting for people that lied to you. The comfort of trusting governmental agencies that should never be trusted. At what point do you get out of your comfort zone and say, whoa, I can now see the truth. Ah, that's good. But my experience has been that 98% of all people that ever get out of their comfort zone do so because, A, of their own spiritual commitment to learn and grow, no matter how painful or lonely initially that journey is, or B, because they've been hit with a crisis so hard, they've been smacked down by life so severely that the universe taught them a lesson they cannot avoid. And as they're laying in their hospital bed, being told what's wrong, then they say, I got it. Okay, I don't want to see people have to learn that lesson. but probably 90% of the people do make change. They only make change because of crisis. Let's say hello now to Peter from Glen Falls. Hi, Peter. You're on the air.
Hi, Gary. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you, but you're going to have to turn whatever's on the in the background off.
Okay, let's see if I can do that. How about that?
That's fine.
Great. Yeah, I'm from Glen Mills, Pennsylvania. I have been a financial advisor, a very successful one, for 35 years. And after doing a lot of work in the private world, you know what that means, I really found out that not only from learning from you and others, but money really is an illusion, and so much corruption. It was so much stolen in a lot of the work that we wanted to do and help the people in terms of recovering from the crisis that occurred in 2008. $70 billion of the money that was actually supposed to come to our organization was stolen by the politicians. I'm not afraid to say that. So I finally said I've had enough. I'm not going to play these games anymore. And I found that I really wanted to help people by going into medicine. So I closed my practice last year and immediately became involved in the emergency medical services business and have been working with patients in a major hospital in the Philadelphia area for about a year. My question to you is, I consulted with physicians in New York, holistic physicians, some of whom you know, and they told me I'm crazy to become a doctor because there's so many rigors on it. The government tells you what to do. The malpractice companies won't let you do this. They force you to do CAT scans and things of that nature. And they're telling me, don't do that. Become a certified clinical nutritionist, and you'll really be able to help people. So I'm kind of up in the air in terms of which way I want to go. I'm 58, 59 years old in superior health.
Okay. Here's what I would suggest. Peter, don't become a physician, because a physician today has to make compromises that you don't want to make. Remember at the beginning of the program I said, will the oncologist ever acknowledge how many people they've treated where there's no real science to back up the efficacy and safety of the therapy? They're in group denial. And there's a simple reason that people are in denial, because you benefit from the denial. You'll be rewarded if you killed every single patient. If you had 10,000 patients and every single one died, you would never be criticized. You would never have a threat to your license. You would get all the money you wanted, providing you did the orthodox medical approach. However, if you cured patients and you cured 10,000 patients from terminal cancer, but you used not acceptable medical practice, you would lose your license. That seems almost Orwellian. It's a twist on Kafka. That's the world that you are entering. It is not a world today to enter. It would be like running a gauntlet with a hope at the end. You're not beaten to death before you get to your goal. Medicine today has failed. 5 million Americans have died of cancer in the last 20 years. All those people had orthodox therapies. They never questioned their physician, and they never tried alternative therapies. You would think that if you were doing anything that caused 5 million deaths, someone would pay attention. Someone would say, maybe we should examine what we're doing. Maybe we should look at other approaches. There is no such new mindset, an openness to change, because you would be surrendering power. So rather than surrender power at all of medicine today is like Mubarak was in Egypt for 40 years. That's how it works. There is no honesty. There's a dictatorship, and it has the power to dictate. It has the power to control accreditation and protocols and insurance coverage. It works hand in hand with the insurance industry. And you don't see doctors out on protest against what doesn't work in medicine. Synthetic hormone replacement therapy, Vioxx, there was 60,000 dead Americans, all preventable deaths. In 4 years, you didn't see a single demonstration of even two doctors marching together. It shows you the true nature of their integrity. And yet in the make-believe world that we live in, these are these revered, all-wise men and women who are so brilliant and sacrifice so much to become this sacred, the sacred temple of knowledge called medicine, that we do not challenge them, and they do not challenge themselves. They keep doing more of the same because that's where the success is, that's where the acceptance, that's where the money is. If that's what you want to become a part of, fine. I don't think you would feel comfortable. You can do far more as a clinical nutritionist because then you can deal with true lifestyle modification. All right, all the best to you. Let's say hello to Matthew in Detroit. Hi, Matthew. Matthew, you're on the air.
Thank you. I'm trying to find, I spoke to you a while back, and I have a brother who has multiple systems atrophy here in Detroit. And we've done a number of things, you know, trying to detox and visit alternative health doctors, practitioners, and things of that nature, phosphatidylcholine and, you know, number of things, alkaline water. I've done a lot of nutritional things, and it seems like he's not improving. His symptoms kind of, he's bedbound, and the blood pressure precipitously drops, and it's life-threatening. That's a major problem. He isn't able to do a lot. He is getting some PT and things of that nature, but he has to be horizontal most of the time. My question is, what would you recommend would be a wise next step? I mean, I just recently got laid off for the near future, so I'm not going to have much money.
Matthew, we've got a poor connection, but I do have enough of an understanding of your predicament. In Detroit, there is a health food store called Zerbo's. That's with a Z, Zerbo's, Zerbos. The woman who owns the store's name is Claire Adams. She is probably the most enlightened facilitator of health issues in that whole Michigan area. Go over to Zerbo, speak with Claire. She will know the holistic physicians in that area who are really good and compassionate and are not just interested in making a buck. When you meet the right person who can help you medically, I'll be happy to send that person a medical protocol that it requires a physician to administer. I can't just send it out to a layperson. But that is the approach I would take. And that way your brother has a chance then of getting some help. It's Claire Adams Zerbo's in Detroit. Then she knows all the holistic medical doctors, and then she will know the good ones. Then I'll be in touch with them. All the best to you and your brother. Let's say hello to Michael Rupert. Hi, Michael.
Hello, Gary. How are you?
Good. What's on today?
Well, we've got we're going to do the usual updates on our joyous and happy, ever improving world situation. But my guest is Scott McGuire. He is a world class organic farmer and gardener, and he's done a series of videos which have been viewed hundreds of thousands of times. I'm just starting to plant here, so we're going to talk about getting some crops in the ground and how easy that can be to do from a master.
Sounds terrific. Thank you very much. We all look forward to hearing your show in a few minutes. I want to thank all of you for taking your time to call in and to listen. The audience is always growing, and the good news is the Progressive Radio Network has the fastest growing internet audience in the world. And when you consider this, unlike NPR, where I'm also heard, and PBS and Pacifica, and all the other non-profit venues out there, non-commercial venues, they spend an inordinate amount of time pitching. Here, you never hear, ever, any of the programs, except occasionally mine, ever pitching for funds. So that way, you get uninterrupted program nonstop, and we're always adding new programs. We don't add programs based upon a left or right perspective, because I'm neither left nor I'm right. I'm progressive, humanistic and spiritual. Honest, but also always looking for the solutions. And sometimes our best solution is starting with what is the truth. If I start with what is not the truth, then every action I take after that will only compound the problem. So pull back, go to neutral, and say, let me spend some time finding the truth, educate myself, so when I do decide to become proactive and make change, at least I know type of change that is like to be sustainable and positive. Have a nice day, everyone.